We don't have a business if we don't have partners like you. We're not a direct-to-consumer business. We need to work as a team, a collaborative effort to help investors, and we need the right organizations with the right direction, the right compass, if you will, and that's what makes this thing work.
Welcome to A Day at DPL, a thought leadership podcast series hosted by DPL founder and CEO David Lau. Tune in as David and other industry leaders explore emerging trends, product innovation, technology, and practice management strategies, sharing practical insights to help advisors accelerate growth and deliver better outcomes for their clients.
Bryce Scaff, welcome to A Day at DPL podcast. So good to see you.
Happy to be here. Always happy to chat with you.
Yeah, it's been many, many years. We've known each other for a long time, going back to my years at Jefferson National. You've been at Dimensional for a long time and have continued to climb the ranks there into all kinds of different positions and different leadership positions. And maybe just give us a little bit of background on your kind of journey at Dimensional.
Yeah, it's been a lot of years, David. I mean, I just celebrated my 28th anniversary of my start date here at Dimensional. So pretty soon there's going to be a three handle on that tenure, which is unreal. It never occurred to me that that's how life would unfold, but I'm thankful that it has. I mean, look, as you mentioned, I've had a lot of different roles around here, but principally it's been the same, which is Dimensional as an organization is always about helping more investors have more fulfilling lives all over the world. And we happen to believe that the fulfillment comes from lots of things in life. But if we can help control and deliver an outstanding financial experience for people, that plays a very big role in freeing people up to lead a more fulfilling life. So from day one, we've had this opportunity and a focus of working with financial professionals to sit between Dimensional and the end investor as a mechanism to ensure they're having a great experience. That model's worked very well. That's been my job from day one, really. I mean, from March 23rd, 1998 till today, my job is to make sure we're amplifying the impact that the financial professional can have on the life of the end investor, the person that ends up consuming the asset, if you will. So in a lot of ways, I'm sort of a chief cheerleader for the investor and everything that we do here, whether it's delivering an investment solution or delivering a service or support structure for the financial professional who's taking care of a beneficiary or an investor. My job is to ensure that they have the tools and resources they need to, again, ultimately have a more fulfilling life.
That's terrific. And when I first got into the RIA space, it was with Jefferson National, and it's end of 2004, and I've been brought in. I'm coming together with some folks that we built the first internet bank together in the country, and looking to get into the insurance space, and said, like, how do we disrupt insurance in the same way? And the bank was about, let's remove the branch to create less overhead, deliver a better value product to the end consumer. So that's always resonated for me. And so when we're looking at it from the insurance point of view, we said, what's the big inefficiency in insurance isn't buildings, it's commissions. So we decided we're going to create a commission-free insurance offering in the annuity space. And I started studying the market because I'm a marketing guy by trade. And you have two choices if that's the case, because traditional distribution is not going to care. So it's, do we go direct to consumer or do we go through, you know, an advisory channel that works on fees? And I identified the RIA market. I start digging into the market and was one of those companies that like really stood out as being just an absolute leader in the space for a number of different reasons. And I was attracted to the ethos kind of Dimensional because I thought it aligned with my own, because it's not just another asset management company. It's driven, created by financial study and research and academic research, driven to the benefit of the consumer, not like chasing hot managers, hot stocks, stuff like that. And talk some more about Dimensional's kind of philosophy for those who are not quite as familiar.
What you're getting at is I think Dimensional has always sort of been a little bit of an outsider to conventional wisdom. Thankfully, conventional wisdom is coming more and more to align with what we've been saying for the better part of 50 years now. We're an evidence-backed organization. I mean, we use finance science and academic type rigor in order to make decisions about how to build portfolios that people consume. I mean, remember, we understand these are not just dollar signs and ticker symbols. What we're talking about here is people's livelihood. This is what they send their kids to school with. This is what you pay for your healthcare with. This is what you put on the dinner table for your family. These are really important symbols, and we understand that around here. So we're not telling stories and experimenting with client money around here at Dimensional. Everything that we do is rigorously tested through a lens, an academic lens, if you will, to ensure that as best you can, you will never know the truth with 100% certainty about what the future holds or why security prices behave the way that they do. But what you want to do is use the best information you have available today to make decisions about how to invest for the future, because investing is never about the rearview mirror. It's always about increasing the likelihoods, the probability of success in the future. So to your point, Dimensional has always been a data-supported organization. Our foundations are in the preeminent universities. We have more than any other organization affiliated with, for example, Nobel Prize winners. We have been very closely tied to 5 Nobel Prize winners here at Dimensional, and almost all of them affiliated with us before they won the Nobel Prize. So in other words, we've identified that this connective tissue between really high-end academic rigor and real-life investment solutions for people, that connection can be made. It's not trivial. It's not easy. And most organizations kind of ignored it and dismissed it. But in 1981, 45 years ago, that's how this company was founded, on that foundation of academic rigor.
And that must resonate with you personally, because you're there 28 going on 30 years, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's not just a job. People who do that, they've got to believe in the mission of the company they're working for. So, I mean, I imagine that resonates really with you personally as well.
I appreciate that question, because you're right. It ended up being a calling that I didn't know I was answering when I started. Actually, I wanted to be a marine biologist, David. I don't know if I told you that. I went to University of California at Santa Barbara, UCSB, for my freshman year of undergrad. And I wanted to be a marine biologist. I was very interested in science. I was always a data person, and I loved the ocean. So I thought that. And I ended up at my first year at UCSB finding finance, if you will, and ended up making a shift in my second year of university up to go to Silicon Valley. I went to Santa Clara University and finished up, and just really full engagement in finance and investments. I just tried all sorts of things. I worked for the old Payne Weber. I worked for a sort of an old school brokerage company on Sand Hill Road in Palo Alto. I worked for an RIA firm in Cupertino. I worked for a large mutual fund complex down in LA for one of the summers. I was a research assistant for the finance department when I was there. So I saw a lot there during undergrad and really developed a passion for the work. But it taught me some of the things I didn't want to do, some of the things I didn't believe were right.
Yep.
And when I came to work at Dimensional in March of 98, look, to be clear, I didn't know what we did. I just knew I wanted to move back to Los Angeles, where I'm from, from the Bay Area. I remember interviewing, going up to the 11th floor in this building on Ocean Avenue in Santa Monica. And I got off the elevator and I turned left and I could see the ocean. That's I told myself, I don't care what they offer me, I will take it. I was, you know, I was a 23-year-old young guy and I didn't need much in terms of criteria. But it didn't take long. Once I started the next Monday, and remember, this was just a few years after the seminal Fama French work on the three-factor model. There are a paper published in the early 90s called The Cross-Section of Expected Stock Returns. And that was coming into its own right around the time I arrived. So it takes some years for that stuff to get digested into the industry. And it didn't take long for me to understand that there's this really strong academic orientation and really starting to understand the business of financial advisors, specifically at that point in time, and seeing how those two line up. Light bulbs, synapses were firing all over the place for me. And the other way that it lined up for me, David, is I was raised in a house where right and wrong were very clear. My father's a CPA. Mm-hmm. So there's a moral ledger when you're the kid of a CPA. It's a debit or a credit. One's red and one's green.
Right.
And so I just never wanted to be in a situation where there was gray area with my moral compass. If I was going to do something, and especially when it came to people's investments, it had to feel like the closest approximation to the truth that I could possibly find.
Yeah, no, I really love that. I appreciate and relate to it too. I've spent my career driven by trying to deliver better value for the end consumer. Because like you said, this is really important stuff that we do in the financial services world. It has such meaningful impact on people's lives in so many different ways. But also talk to me about the evolution of Dimensional. So 2004, when I'm first hearing about Dimensional, and then we ultimately develop a relationship and we leverage every VIT we could get you guys to make into our product. Tell me about the evolution, because at that time, it was like the reputation was kind of this exclusive club, and you had to kind of become a member of the club in order to be a Dimensional advisor. And I know there's like some real consistency, like you say, in the academic research, and the fundamentals really haven't changed. But how has the rest of Dimensional kind of evolved from that time?
If I can, I'll go back even before that, because you were in 2004, and I remember it very well, that period of time. But in some ways, everything that happened from that point forward had its roots in the foundation that was built before that. And so if you go all the way back to why the firm was even built, why were we built? I talked about our purpose of helping investors, but even before that, why would David Booth and Rex Singfield, the founders of Dimensional, start and build this company? And initially it was very simple concepts. It was that there was evidence that large institutional investors weren't diversified. They had a bunch of large cap stocks. And there was this burgeoning evidence that suggests that diversification was a positive attribute in somebody's portfolio. And further, that small cap stocks actually, not only were they a good diversifier, but they had higher expected returns than the large caps that most institutions held in their allocations. So Dimensional was started on that foundation that built the industry's first U.S. microcap fund. And that was the first fund in 1981. And those principles haven't gone away. They're still here. But you mentioned about this exclusive club. So for the first 9 years of our existence as an organization, we only worked with institutions. They could be public funds or foundations or endowments or what have you, but they were institutional investors, asset owners, ideally working on the behalf of other beneficiaries, of course. And in 1989, 1990 is when we started working with independent advisors. And that was a watershed moment, I would say, for our firm, because it allowed us to really tap into what I would say the totality of opportunity to execute on our core purpose, which we talked about. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned this era of exclusivity of Dimensional, and it wasn't that we didn't want to work with everybody. It's just we were super aware of the problems of hot money when it comes to mutual funds. We got a lot of undisciplined money coming in and out of mutual funds that forced Dimensional to trade and incur costs for other investors. That's a problem. And remember, all the investors before that were institutions. The common wisdom at the time was retail is not smart money and institutional is smart money. So why would you want to combine those two? So the agreement that we made with Dan Wheeler, who was the gentleman that started our advice business here at Dimensional, working with advisors, said, I guarantee you, strategic allocation, disciplined money, well-diversified, no hot money. And that was the, so that we were not hurting any shareholders. So that criteria was in place for a long, long time. We didn't want undisciplined financial professionals in the portfolios. So that meant we wanted them to come to conferences, really explore what we do. I'm perfectly fine. Always have been if someone says, this isn't for me. That's okay. We're not for everybody. And we're getting to be for more and more people as they come to understand what we do. But that was okay. So in those early days, we ended up with a selection bias. The folks that chose to work with Dimensional were the ones that really wanted to understand what we do. And they ended up embracing us for almost the totality of their allocation.
Yeah. And I also remember, you know, a lot of, and you probably still do, you know, much of it, a lot of great kind of practice management for those advisors as well. So I remember participating in a lot of the education sessions you guys would hold regionally, and they were really advisor-driven groups facilitated by Dimensional. And it was really about practice management. It wasn't about like, let's sell more Dimensional product. It was just you guys were facilitating good practice management discussion. You know, people were talking about hiring issues and growth issues and business issues. And I thought that was also a really terrific and unique way of supporting advisors.
Yes. And actually, we have a conference right now. It's a great example. Today, downstairs, we have an applied communications conference. It is all about helping advisors internalize these concepts and understand how they might approach the narrative, how they might communicate with clients and prospects. Because we can all sit around here and have the best idea. Like, we could have genius level ideas here. But if we can't get people to understand them and respond to them productively, not only do we not have a business together, we haven't actually impacted the life of the person that we're trying to help. So it's very important. The communication is one example of practice management, if you will. But we also want, because we don't have a direct to retail, like we don't compete with advisors. We don't have an advice business here. The only way that advice is offered using Dimensional funds is if an advisor is using our funds for their clients. So we have all these different types of events. We have study groups where peers are getting together. I think we have something like 80 study groups that we do now. We have executive forums where CEOs get together and CIOs get together and COOs get together. We have a very large global study for financial advisors. We have investor studies that we do as well. All of that is to help ensure that we're not just working with firms that have been successful, but we're working with firms that will thrive in the future. Mm-hmm. Because again, back to the objective, we want to help more people have a fulfilling experience. The more is a really important word in that sense of purpose. We're trying to impact the world, and it is not enough to stand up and pat ourselves on the back and say, hey, look how great we've done so far. It's not good enough. Job's not done.
Yep. Never is. Never is.
No, no.
Progress is made. So talk a little bit about now how you are expanding that. So in the RIA world, from 20 years ago, it's unrecognizable to today, right? I mean, just massively different, so much explosive growth, so much assets driving to the top of the market with these mega firms backed by private equity. What are you guys seeing and how are you approaching that market differently or supporting it differently today than you were a decade ago?
In some ways, no different at all. In some ways, quite different. So let's talk about that. When I think about what Dimensional does, I think we really focus on three things. One is the investment experience, of course. What solutions are being delivered into the market that our clients, the financial professional, need to ensure they're effectively helping their clients? So then it's the client experience. You got investment experience, you got client experience. What are we offering? It could be practice management, like you talked about. It could be communications training. It could be the resources and content we put out. It could be the conferences, the webcasts, all those things. What sort of client experience are we putting forth for the financial professional? And the last is the employee experience. We need to ensure that at Dimensional, our people, which are the conduit to the ideas that we have here, are top A-plus players. They understand the work that you all do in the community, and they're advocates for that work. So that's how we think about evolution here at Dimensional. And so how things have evolved now, and in some ways that hasn't changed. We don't offer investment solutions unless they're tested, unless we know there's demand. So for example, how might you test whether we've been successful at focusing on investment experience and the client experience? Well, 100% of the funds that Dimensional had 20 years ago are still here. 100% have survived. That's remarkably different from the industry. If you look at all the industry funds that existed 20 years ago across equity and fixed income, only 45% are still alive. Over half are gone. So what that tells me is there's a lot of companies out there that put stuff into the market, cross their fingers and say, boy, I hope this sells. And that has just never been the way that we've done it. We've said, let's understand what David needs. Let's understand what his unique challenges are, what his vision, his objectives are. And maybe it could be a brand new tax problem, for example, that we didn't know 5 years ago or what have you. So yep. Let's continue innovating. But when we launch something, it's been rigorously tested from a rationale perspective. Does it fit within our lens of what's a good way to build a portfolio? And that there's demand there. We know that there's a need for it in the marketplace. So consequently, our funds stay around because they have lots of demand. And not only do they have lots of demand, they actually deliver what they're supposed to. I mean, versus 20 years ago, 75% of our funds have beat their benchmark, which is astoundingly different from the rest of the industry, which is 14%. 14% of the fixed income and equity funds that existed 20 years ago beat their benchmarks. And those are mostly conventional active managers because index funds should have zero beat their benchmarks because they just match the index minus fees.
Right.
So all of that says it's kind of the same. That's back to this point about being the same way we've approached it always. But your point about the changing landscape of advice absolutely is true. It's incredible how many firms are now over $100 billion in assets under management.
Oh, yeah.
I remember we used to measure how many were over $1 billion.
That's right. Yeah, I've been talking about that recently with a number of people where I would bet you there are more firms over $100 billion today than there were over $1 billion 20 years ago. There were a small couple dozen or something that were over $1 billion 20 years ago. And there's probably well more than that, over $100 billion today. It's unbelievable. One of the things that you know has also really changed in the advisor's world is the movement from being an investment manager to being a wealth manager and financial planner and bringing estate planning and all kinds of other dimensions of the financial advice into their world. In 2004, again, when I was looking into the market, RIAs were very much investment managers and differentiated by the fact that they sat on the same side of the table as the client, right? They were fiduciaries working on fees. They weren't transactional, weren't driven by commissions or transaction fees. And that's kind of what differentiated them. And now everybody's that, right? I mean, everybody in every channel manages assets like that. But the need for more services and more products and being more holistic is a huge change that has really been driven over the last decade. And really, I think, by the top of the market, because those firms are all holistic, full service.
I agree with what you said 100%. And actually, the data validates what you said. We've done this, I alluded to this advisor study that we do every year. And we've been doing it for many years. And what I can tell you is that you can define successful firm a number of different ways. Most people talk about the fastest growing firms, or you could look at a mosaic of metrics, the highest client retention and employee retention and margins and growth and some combination of all that stuff. But no matter which way you slice it, the most successful firms end up offering a variety of resources for clients. Back to your point, gone are the days of investment selection and charging 1%. That's right. Been gone a long time right. At this point.
Right.
Even gone are the days of building an asset allocation for 1%. It's so much more involved than that right now. And it has to be. And none of us should be surprised that in any competitive industry that you end up offering more services for the same fee. And in fact, maybe for less fees. I mean, there's a lot of entrants now, very formidable entrants who are charging less than the standard 1% that fee-only advisors have been charging for a long time and offering equivalent or more services. So it's going to be a really interesting time. I say to the longtime independents, congratulations, you won. You have shown the world that a fiduciary-minded approach. Now, I know that not every part of the ecosystem has a legal fiduciary obligation, but the independent fee-based advisor has influenced the direction of travel for the entire business.
Yep.
Look at the wirehouses. How much new business is going on commission platforms versus fee platforms, advice platforms?
That's
the
right.
latter is dominating the
That's
momentum.
Right.
So all of that, everything is, which is great for investors because everything is converging on more of an investor-centric approach, a client-centric approach, rather than a sales and commission-driven type structure.
Right. And that's what drove kind of the creation of Jefferson National, which led to the creation of DPL for me. Because when I created Jefferson National, the product was about, can we deliver value to the client by taking the commission out? And we were able to launch a $20 a month flat fee variable annuity, which was unheard of. And then provide a tremendous selection of funds, you know, to invest in. And I kind of modeled it off Schwab. Schwab, I think, had like 80% market share at the time. It's like, this is kind of like OneSource wrapped in tax deferral. And we'll go to the market like that. And what I learned was that was a great value proposition because you could basically get unlimited tax deferral for $20 a month, which is tremendously valuable, but it was too hard to use in that way because the assets sat with the insurance carrier as opposed to on the custodial platform, and actually managing a client portfolio together like that was just too difficult. But we were very successful in turning it into an exchange product where your client owns an expensive old annuity, get them out of it and put them into a low-cost product. But that kind of informed me in trying to, again, what you're talking about, drive the market to a fiduciary fee-based model. And one of the big things that hasn't been has been insurance. And to me, the reason it hasn't been, and this I get to see firsthand from Jefferson National, is one, there weren't enough products in the market. So insurance carriers are copycats. They're just going to, oh, Jefferson National can sell a lot, you know, with this product. We'll all build a product like that rather than build their best product. So I thought we should work with carriers, bring products to market, which we've done now with like 20 carriers and 80 products we brought to market. And then the other thing was the technology, and the technology needed to be embedded in the advisor's desktop. The insurance assets can work with the rest of the portfolio. They can work in the fee billing world. And so we created tremendous technology, which we now embed in, you know, we're Orion's embedded insurance solution. We're Black Diamond's embedded insurance solution. You know, we're integrated into PAR and Tamarack and basically everywhere. But it really helps eliminate the barriers for being in a complete advice model if you're an advisor, rather than having to be hybrid if you want to use insurance, where 98% of my relationship with you is in an advice model. And then for 2% of it, I'm going to turn around and sell you an annuity with a commissioned hat on. It just doesn't make sense. But we're seeing a lot of progress in that. Just generically, industry-wide, we're working with 8 of the top 10 RIA firms today. But one of the really rewarding things to me personally is we've seen the regulators starting to come down on the hybrid advisor saying, how come you're not evaluating fee-based annuities now? They're in the market now for a decade. Why are you mostly an advice model, but you're going to sell this product on a commission? So that's been a great thing that I've continued to be an advocate for, trying to get into that complete fiduciary on the side of the client in its totality as an advisor.
Yeah, I think that's, all of us are here to say, okay, what's ultimately, if I could wave a magic wand and design an experience for an investor, someone who's paying for advice, what would that look like? And you'd be hard pressed for someone not to say comprehensive.
Right.
Be hard pressed for someone not to say balance sheet approach, right? I mean, a single lens through which to look at all the parts. For example, there's a reason when you go into a doctor's office, they look at your blood pressure and your heartbeat and they test for all sorts of things and mobility and reflexes and what, because they're all related. You can't just do a blood draw or just do blood pressure or look at someone's heart rate and say how healthy they are. You can't do that. Those tests don't exist. They're all interconnected. And it's not dissimilar when it comes to someone's financial picture. So, for example, I know investments pretty well. I've been in this business for a long time, and I think I get markets and how markets work. And I certainly understand dimensional funds. My wife and I have a financial advisor.
Right.
Not to tell me how to invest, but to help us put the whole financial picture in place with the backdrop of our goals and objectives and the vision we have for our lives.
Yep.
And to help us manage that in an unbiased way through time. That is non-trivial, and it's of significant value, even if I don't need them to tell me about which funds to pick. Now, for most people, that is actually a really valuable service. But my point is, there's so many other things that need to happen to get someone's total financial picture in frame.
Yeah, and one of the ways our company's worlds kind of connect as well is around academic research. And I've always been driven by academic research and wanting proof, right, in what you're doing, to know that you're doing the right thing. And it's backed by research. And one of the things with annuities is, academically, lots of your Nobel Prize winners would tell you an annuity is a great way of funding retirement income. They're super efficient and can address all kinds of risks. And to me, it was always a shame that advisors who were working on fees couldn't really feel free to use those products because they were driven by commissions, which drove up costs, which drove up complexity. And so they kept them out of their purview instead. And one of the first ways really interacted with Dimensional was talking to David Booth, because he was trying to design a longevity product kind of funded mm-hmm. by some Dimensional investments. And we were trying to put together a product on that because, again, the academic research is there. The value of an annuity in a plan around retirement and retirement income is kind of indisputable by academics, yet for fiduciaries, they were just inaccessible because of the structure.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit cost and complexity have worn away at trust for many years, whether it's the investor or the advisor, the fee-based advisor. I think trust was just not an asset that the insurance market had in those ecosystems. So I'm very excited to see what's been going on, because it started now to very well align with what a fiduciary orientation might look like. Again, even if you're not under the fiduciary standard, you can operate as a fiduciary. I don't care what part of the ecosystem you're in, you can still operate as a fiduciary. And so it's really nice to see that there's solutions out there, there's products out there that actually fit someone's orientation. So fee-based, low cost, lack of complexity. But your point about retirement income is great. I mean, you're right. There's been a lot, Bob Merton being a preeminent advocate
yes.
for these ideas. And many folks would say, hey, one of the principal risks that people have, even if they don't articulate it this way, is having sufficient income replacement in retirement, right? This idea that some people view your retirement date as, okay, when I have enough money, I've accumulated a pile of money that I can retire on. Whether or not they've done enough testing on that assumption, I can't comment, but that's one way of looking at it. Let me just get as much money as I can and I'll decumulate through retirement. Another way of approaching it is just to say, I know how much I think I'll spend in retirement. As long as that is coming in the form of cash flow somehow, I'll be okay. And that's really what a well thought out insurance plan might map out for them.
Yes. So it's just one of those things. You need as a financial advisor, you need as many tools in your tool chest as you can that can deliver and serve different purposes for different investors based on their goals and objectives, just like you were talking about for yourself. You need to have those tools. And that's what we're trying to bring to financial advisors in a way that aligns with their ethos, low cost, no commissions, value driven. And it's also why we look to work with you continually in this capacity, because also in annuities, historically, you tended to see very high cost funds. You're not only paying the price through a high price of a product, but then once you get then into the investments, you're looking at very high cost investments. And in the fiduciary model, in the traditional sales model, that never mattered. But in the fiduciary model, you're going into an RIA world where price does matter. They care about the investment options and they care about what they cost. They don't want to see that, okay, you've got this share class of an American fund that is costing me 75 basis points when I know I can get the institutional share class for 20 outside of the annuity. We want to keep the same kind of funds and the same kind of costs within the products. And I know you guys do that to your VITs, and whether you're buying them through an annuity or buying a similar strategy in a fund, you're getting the same product.
Yeah, that's actually a really important principle for us. I'm glad you touched on it, which is no matter what the wrapper is for where you consume dimensionals, call it intellectual capital or investment approach, whether it's a mutual fund, an ETF, VIT, a CIT, a separately managed account, a UMA, like insurance wrapper, there's a service that we offer, and we never quite understood why the wrapper itself would change the pricing structure. So we've worked very hard to sort of align those things. The reason why that helps quite a bit is I can virtually guarantee if you asked an advisor, or certainly an investor, if you had a 401k plan, sort of an investment allocation, your brokerage account, and an insurance allocation, would you like those to look different or should they look the same with regard to your investment approach? And you'll never get a good answer for why they should look different. They should look the same. If you have a certain orientation, you believe a certain set of ideas, you appreciate the principles of diversification and low cost and tax efficiency and discipline and academic foundation, our opinion is, and that's certainly our goal, is to be able to, you should have that available everywhere you consume an investment vehicle.
And important, like in my world, for a number of reasons. One is when you're trying to do something new and you're trying to get people comfortable with it, it makes it even harder if you're trying to tell them, and it's going to be different, right? So it's a lot easier if I can say, we're going to bring you dimensional funds. They're going to be the same kind of funds that you're used to investing in. They're going to be priced in a similar manner that you're used to seeing them priced, but they're going to have the advantage of being in a tax-deferred wrapper, right? And that's how you should be thinking about this annuity product. And that's a much easier way of getting somebody comfortable with a new concept. It's like, now I just have to get your head around the fact that this isn't your father's annuity or your grandfather's annuity, as per the old card commercials. You can get your head around the fact that we've taken the commissions out, we put in high-quality investment options, and now, can I open your mind to thinking about annuities differently?
Well, it's also a more efficient way for an advisor or wealth manager to run their business, right? I mean, not only do we know that there's a relationship between more successful businesses and more services offered, including insurance and retirement planning, but it's also eases the burden of having to explain differences in performance across, here's your retirement plan, here's your brokerage account, here's your insurance, your annuity performance. Like the underlying performance there, you don't want to explain three different things. You want to be able to have a discussion about what's happened in the last 6 months or last quarter, however often you meet with your clients, and have that ideally transcend across their investment experience. So you can move on to also talk about things like what's happening in their life and how are the kids and has there any update on their goals to buy a second vacation home or update their insurance or, you know, what. You can move on to those things rather than spend all of your time explaining why these investments are performing differently.
Exactly. So tell us a little bit about what's on the horizon for Dimensional. I know one of the big things over the last number of years was the offerings of ETFs and moving away from just having the traditional mutual fund structure into ETFs. Do you have other big plans on the horizon? What's coming down the pike from Dimensional?
Yeah, thanks for the question, because it is fun times around here. There's so much innovation going on, and there has been. One of the things I'm really excited about and most proud of is, you know, when COVID hit, you have this opportunity as an organization to say, okay, we're going to like duck our heads and get in the trenches and we'll poke ourselves up when the dust is settled. But we didn't do that at all. The ETF rule, which was SEC Rule 6011, which came out in September 2019, basically provided Dimensional with a regulatory framework that would allow us to do what we have been doing since 1981, basically, which is systematic with flexible overlays, the way that we execute our portfolios, to do that in an ETF wrapper. Because up until that time, ETFs were all index funds, and that's just, we don't do indexing. We know there's some real frictions and constraints and rigidities with indexing that cost investors more than they should be paying, and that we can improve on indexing. And that's what we've been doing since 81. So when that SEC rule came out, we said, okay, let's sprint toward offering these systematic active ETFs. They're not indexed ETFs, but they basically will look and feel like what we've been doing for decades. So we launched our first ETFs in 2020, quickly became a force in the active ETF environment. We did the largest conversion of mutual funds to ETFs. We had these legacy tax-managed mutual funds that we launched in all the way back to 1999. So we've been focused on taxes and tax efficiency for a long, long time. Yep. But it made sense for us to take those mutual funds and convert them to ETFs because we knew the holders of those were taxable investors if you're in a tax-managed mutual fund. So that was incredibly novel. We did $35-odd billion overnight. Basically, you went to sleep with a mutual fund. You woke up with an ETF, which was incredibly innovative and still the largest of its kind to date. So we launched a bunch more ETFs, and we became the largest sponsor of U.S. active U.S. ETFs under that new SEC Rule 6C11. So that's been going gangbusters. We now have 42 ETFs in the U.S. market. But one of the things which you probably were getting to that we've worked on the last couple of years was getting exemptive relief to offer ETF share classes of our mutual funds. And this is a really transformative issue. I know it's nuanced and complex for a lot of people, but basically, so in 2023, we kind of went public with our pursuit or our request to get exemptive relief from the SEC to offer an ETF share class of a mutual fund. Basically, it's the same pool of underlying securities. It's just a different access point to those securities. And the idea is that at some point, you'll be able to convert between ETF and mutual fund. There's all sorts of reasons why that's interesting. One is you get economies of scale, you share costs, you get, again, that to be the both mutual fund shareholder and ETF shareholder end up getting the benefits of scale. The ETF, for example, we just launched our first ETF share class a couple of weeks back. And so it's the first active ETF share class of its kind. We were the first to be granted that exemptive relief. We're now the first to launch an active ETF share class. It was of our first mutual fund that I already talked about with you, our U.S. Yeah. microcap mutual fund. So almost on the 45th anniversary, we launched the ETF share class, this mutual fund. That has a 45-year track record on day one of the ETF. So that ETF now, it absorbs that whole track record. So that's very cool because there's proof in the pudding that that portfolio has done about 150 basis points per year for almost 45 years better than the index. So you know what you're buying now when you get that ETF. So now, theoretically, back to that point, you could have a 401k plan, an investor invest their 401k in a mutual fund and also now in their brokerage account on the ETF if that's what they prefer to have. So they might actually just prefer to have the mutual fund as well. There's a lot of action going on there, and there's a lot of other firms that are now pursuing that, and I think you're going to see a lot more of that ETF share class in the marketplace.
I'm sure there's a lot of efficiency in getting to that structure. That's terrific. We've been always enjoyed, you know, working with Dimensional. You guys, again, are just a pinnacle in the RIA space and in the investor space, and it's terrific to work with such a great organization. I remember actually some years ago getting, I'll call it, grilled by David Booth and David Butler and Gene Foma and Ken French talking about my business model and why we should align and, you know, how had kind of the same ethos in driving down costs and keeping the end investor in mind. And it was a fun thing for me, actually, because I'm, you know, so confident in what we do and the value we provide that it was great. And I just have always had enormous respect and admiration for that whole group of leaders at Dimensional.
Well, thank you, David. And it's, again, we don't have a business if we don't have partners like you, because we're not a direct to consumer business. We need to work as a team, a collaborative effort to help investors. And we need the right organizations with the right direction, the right compass, if you will, pointed in the right direction. And that's what makes this thing work. And so you mentioned getting grilled. Getting grilled around Dimensional is sort of a form of love, if you will.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
We don't just say yes to any idea that comes along. It's part of the process. In some ways, it feels like an academic institution. You know, you're up doing a dissertation. And what happens in PhD dissertations is there is bombs thrown at you. Like, you get challenged big time. So you've got to go in with rigorous research, a very firm foundation, and a knowledge of the problem you're trying to solve. And so that process around here is alive and well, always is, always will be. And so when you're in that process, you learn to check your ego at the door. There's nothing personal.
Right.
You just learn that's part of the process, and it's all to ensure that whatever the outcome is, whether we decide not to do something or we decide to do something, that it is the right call.
Awesome. This has been terrific, Bryce. I appreciate the time and great to catch up and hear about everything going on with Dimensional. You've always been a terrific partner and a company, again, I admire and feel privileged to work with.
Well, likewise, David. Always good to chat with you. Thank you. Congratulations to you and the team for all the good work you're doing out there.
Awesome. Thanks, Bryce.
Thank you for listening. To check out other DPL podcasts, visit our YouTube page. You can also visit dpl.com for more information.